and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Scotty is not joining us this week. Ce n'est pas ici aujourd'hui. That's all the French I know because I'm trying to infer that Scotty is presently in the next province over. He is in Montreal this week, so he was unavailable to join us, at least presently at this recording. You will hear Scotty in a bit. But first, I will do our usual opening number. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today, we will continue with our candidate interviews for the 2018 municipal election. We have five more city council candidates for you to hear from this week. They are Barbara Mann, Mary Thring, Jason Dodge, Indu Aurora, and Mark McKinnon. To kick things off this week, we are going to do things in numerical order of the wards. So we're going to hear from Ward 1 candidate Barbara Mann first, and Ward 2 candidate Mary Thring second. Scotty is the one who is able to catch up with Barbara Mann, and so I will throw it to Scotty on location, talking to council candidate Barbara Mann, and then you'll hear me talk to council candidate Mary Thring.
I'm with Barbara Mann. Barb's a candidate in Ward 1 in this year's municipal election here in Guelph. Barb, can you tell us a bit about yourself for those out there that might not know who you are?
Sure. Hello, Open Source listeners. Thank you for taking some time to be with me. My name's Barbara Mann, and I live in Ward 1. I was born in Guelph and raised here, but I've also had the opportunity to live, work, and travel in other parts of the world, so I've seen a lot of best practices. My father was a professor, my mother a social worker, and I was very lucky because early on, they made sure that I understood the importance of civic engagement, especially if you want to make constructive changes in your community. I have a very broad background. It ranges from the sciences to the institutional, corporate, and union background. And I hope that all of those skills are something that can help me bring your voice to council.
You're one of eight people running for a seat in Ward 1, or the ward, as we call it here, just the ward. There's a lot of people, every election, want to run here for their seat as opposed to other ridings. Why do you think that is?
That's a really great question. I think what it is about this area is it's one of the areas that specifically this year that is being intensified at a rate that is unforeseen in the past. And people want to be part of that. They want to be involved in how their community is going to be shaped. And the difference between some of our wards throughout the city is the diversity from one section of the ward to the other. And I think that's really prevalent in a couple of them, especially Ward 1. We have the oldest neighborhood right out to one of the newest neighborhoods. We have a neighborhood feeling a bit disconnected because they're the oldest and it's changing so rapidly, and we have one that's feeling disconnected because they are sadly short of really necessary services.
So you and I are in the same neighborhood, the same street actually. We've bumped into each other at many a community meeting and events over the years, usually anything regarding our plentiful condo developments. Do you see that as one of the key issues still in Ward 1? Have we hit peak condo, or things just getting started? Is that very high on the radar? Is it kind of like, well, the people have accepted it, it's just going to keep going? What do you think?
I think that the community is divided. I think there are the new residents who are really excited about their new homes. At the same time, they're a bit challenged. A few I've talked to have been missing green space. They may have moved from a larger place, they may have moved from a country setting and they were downsizing, or they weren't downsizing but they thought they were taking on a similar lifestyle without the maintenance. People are starting to realize that there's been a lot of very quick development, but it hasn't been effective development. And people are wanting to take part in that at the same time, there's people who are waiting to get into these new developments. A really important piece that has happened, it's actually a historical moment for municipalities, is that the province has called a piece out and amended it in their Poverty Promoting Affordable Housing Act. And this actually gives municipalities the option to implement inclusionary zoning, which requires affordable housing units to be included in residential developments. And this is saying that they can be for rent or sale, and it means that you can also have units at market rent. And we actually have a model of this in Guelph already that's very successful, that was done years ago. To me, it's a no-brainer. It's something we must commit to, is working with both the federal and the provincial and having our own commitment within the community to make this happen, because affordable housing is at such a prime now, and it encompasses all types of housing, so that it's not just social housing, but it's also market rent value.
So you've been very involved in the Jane's Walk event every year in town, held in honor of journalist and municipal maven Jane Jacobs. What do you think Jane would think of Guelph in 2018? Is it a town that's on the right track, or does it need some more work?
I think Jane would feel that our public participation is sort of a tokenism. And she is a big believer that people who walk the streets are the people who should help design it, because she believes in a safe and connected community, as do I. And I think she would be worried that so much commercial space in these new developments is still vacant, but we don't have a daycare downtown, and we used to have a two-year waiting list for the daycare that was in the Cooperators building. I think she would be disappointed that we don't have safe connections still, that we are aiming that way. For example, there's going to be a bridge coming across from the new Woodsite development. But what I think she would be critical of is that many of these large tract developments are enclaves of their own, almost gated communities without a gate, and that the piece that's missing is a welcoming, that if I wanted to walk my dog through that new neighborhood, that it would be a welcome thing to do.
So also top of mind citywide, but specifically here in the ward, is the issue of crime, particularly property theft. We're kind of at the point where if you want a bike, you should pretty much sleep with it if you want to see it the next day. Now, the general attitude seems to be one of acceptance, I think, and the perception is, well, the police can't do very much to help. There's, you know, Facebook sites, people trying to get their stuff back. What steps do you think the city could take to address the spike, other than, I know the mayor has said that we should get more police and put more into crime prevention, but how do you see it?
You might be surprised to hear this, but it is not just our neighborhood. I have talked to people who are of lower income, whose only transportation is specifically the bicycle, who are being targeted. I've talked to people who live in the highest taxed neighborhoods, and the same thing is happening to them. There is no specifics of who is being targeted. There's no one ward that's being left out of it. And we're all needing to have a really serious conversation about what is the social thing that's going on behind this. I don't feel that increasing police presence is necessarily the correct response, because when it becomes more militant, it is a situation where people may become more more active in a different way. What I would like to see in the way of the policing is that the police are able to get the data and actually respond to some of the calls. For example, when there is somebody who is blatantly walking down a street, being a porch pirate, as they're called, who are literally walking up one set of stairs, off that porch, if they don't find anything, up to the next one and down, that there would be a team that would be able to respond to those calls and stop those people in action, because it's the inaction that starts to defer people doing more of that. I also believe that the serious conversation has to deal with the opioid crisis and the crystal meth that's being used in the community. And I'm really excited that we have an outreach worker who can specifically be the first point of call for people who may be looking to find a different way of life and help them to make that change in a positive way.
So in terms of another issue beyond what we've already discussed, what would you say should be really high on the priority list to be tackled by the incoming administration, whoever it may be?
Wow, there's so many fun things there. The first one is public input. I really believe that the public input is where a lot of the solutions lie. And I would like to encourage that we don't just have the public consultations where it's what I call downstream after the decisions are being made, saying, for example, if it's a development, here's three to choose from. It's always more effective if it's done upstream so that people help develop those choices, and then the people who come in a bit later know that there's been solid constructive input from the beginning. Because when it's done what I mentioned as downstream, it tends to end up where it's feeling more like it's on the defensive and fighting versus feeling inclusive. The second thing is I'm really excited about the library. I don't know any great city in the world that doesn't have a phenomenal library. I'm very challenged by the idea of P3, which is the private-public partnership, because records show that these are not successful. And the other thing that we need to really move forward on is getting our parkland dedication bylaw in writing before the 22 developments that are open on the council's table right now actually get approved, because there's millions and millions of dollars that we will lose if we don't have that parkland dedication bylaw in place.
And if people wanted to find out more about your campaign or if they wanted to contact you, how should they do that?
They can email me at barbara@barbaramann.ca. They can call me at 226-979-7197. And my website is barbaramann.ca.
So, Mary, you are running in Ward 2, which is one of only a few seats or a few wards in the city that has at least one open seat, assuming Mr. Gordon isn't reelected. So do you think that betters your odds, or, you know, are the odds the same, you know, no matter if you're running in a ward with two people? I'm just speaking politically.
I don't think there are any guarantees in any election. I don't think incumbents are guaranteed, whether it's our ward or any ward. And we have an interesting slate of candidates, I think, across the city, and certainly in Ward 2.
So why did you decide that you wanted to run in this election? What's important to you?
I grew up in Guelph, and when I came back 8 years ago and made my home in Ward 2, I was really excited and really proud, and the city has grown and changed, which is healthy and normal, but there's a lot that's going on. Sometimes it makes you scratch your head, sometimes it makes you bang your head, and they're just, I think, there are other ways of looking at things, and there are other ways of doing things, and there are other voices, and those other voices need to be heard, and they need to be respected.
Is there anything specifically you're thinking about?
I'm thinking about accountability. I'm thinking about the way the city communicates with its citizens and its residents. I'm talking about the way the city delivers its services. Mm. I'm also, in the bigger picture, thinking that this is going to be a change election. Mm. And if it isn't, it should be. Mm. With the change in the provincial government, we may be feeling smug about, well, we're not Toronto and no one's invoking the Constitution on us. Mm-hmm. Mr. Ford has clearly signaled his intentions on how he's going to handle municipal issues. Mm. He's also just finished his audit that says, oh, the books are in worse shape than we thought. And you can bet people are going to have to pay more. They're going to have to pay more on the provincial level, and it will be downloaded again onto the municipalities. Mm-hmm. And we have to prepare for that.
I'll come back to that in a sec, but you also mentioned about communications, and I think this is my third or fourth election I've covered in this city, and I think that that particular aspect keeps coming up, that people feel like they're out of the loop or they hear about things too late. How can you change that as a counselor? How can we change that collectively in terms of making the city better informed?
There's a couple of ways. The city staff, the communication staff, it's quite a decent size, and they are quite professional, but they communicate what they're told to communicate. And I would like to see, rather than just celebrations of, aren't we great in Guelph, I would actually like to see data attached to that. I would like to see key performance indicators that say, here's where we're starting out, here's where we're going to go, and here's how we're going to get there. And then an update that says, here's what we did with this program, here's where we fell short, here's how we're going to correct it. That includes our construction projects, which just seem to go on for ever, and we never get an idea of why they're so delayed and what they end up costing and that sort of thing. And there's one other part, and it may seem old-fashioned, but we have to take into account that many of our seniors are actually not online and don't receive their information that way. And so we don't have a daily paper anymore. The Trib tries, but there has to be other ways of communicating across the board, and that whether that's using CJOY, whether it's certainly as a counselor, I would have more town halls. I've learned so much door knocking from one end of the ward to the other. And people have such a wide variety of interests and concerns.
That seems particularly paramount given Ward 2. There are a lot of seniors in Ward 2. So are you hearing that they feel particularly sort of left out in what's been happening the last few years?
I'm not sure if it's left out. I think that they feel concerned. They bring a life perspective and a life experience. I also know in 2016, I worked on the team that did the census. And most of my work happened to be in Ward 2. We have a wide range of incomes and a wide range of ages and life situations. And seniors particularly, especially those on fixed incomes, are very concerned about their taxes, about their quality of life. It's all well and good for the greedy to go, well, they could sell their houses and cash in. Where are they going to go? And maybe they want to stay in the community that they've lived in for X number of years. And that's a big part of the concerns that I hear from seniors.
Right, and it's a catch-22 as well, because some seniors may want to downsize, but there's nowhere to downsize to. It's there's a serious deficit of, you know, 1-2-bedroom apartments in the city.
1-2-bedroom apartments for just the employed, for anybody that wants a 1 or 2-bedroom apartment. There's a deficit of apartments, period. And I was really disappointed when I saw the change in the rental policy that was enacted at the last city council meeting in terms of, well, we'll cut back on affordable housing, but we'll ask for more rental housing. And you may know this because you were there. I never saw anybody raise the notion of what's going to prevent these magical new rental units from becoming Airbnbs. What protects the rental stock? These are things that are important. You cannot have a successful economy without housing for a broad range of incomes. You have to be able to provide affordable places to live for shop clerks and waitresses and bartenders and all the people that make the things that we like work in Guelph.
In other words, you know, most of the people who work downtown.
I hear you.
You were mentioning Mr. Ford and the provincial government. I think the lesson people have taken away from the situation with Bill, what was Bill 5 became Bill 31, is that when it comes to things that this government wholeheartedly believes in, they're not afraid of, like, of pushing it, of using what Premier Ford calls his mandate. And so you're talking from a municipal perspective of being on council and how work can be done to sort of mitigate that. But I think a lot of people might ask, well, if you're talking about standing up to the provincial government, at the end of the day, they are going to do exactly what they want to do because they have that power. So how can we stand up to that sort of muscle?
That's the point. We can't.
Yeah.
That is exactly the point. We can't. Guelph has, in the last 15 years, enacted and enjoyed many benefits from the Liberal government and having a representation at the cabinet level. Many of the municipal projects that were enacted in the last 15 years that we're still paying for came out of the largesse of the Liberal government. All of that is going away, I promise you. And we can't stand up to it, so we're going to have to live with it. And my real feeling is municipal politics is the absolute essence of democracy. Municipal politics is what affects your day-to-day life. And municipal politics is clear the snow. Cut the grass, pick up the garbage, and please replace some pipe from time to time. And if we could get those things right, then we can look at the bigger picture and take those other things into account. But those are the things we have to be able to pay attention to and we have to be able to get done in order to ensure a quality of life.
Mm-hmm. There's always this push-pull focusing on today's issue versus the bigger picture, the long-term stuff, the 5-year, 10-year, 20-year stuff. How do you balance all that?
This is where you listen to what people are asking for. This is where you look at the larger, what kind of a place do we want to live in? And then we look about, is it a nice to have? Is it a need to have? It's kind of like having a house. It's and for many of us, that might only be a dream. And one of the reasons I'm really happy to have been able to do this interview with you is I'm glad to be able to be speaking with the university and community radio audience. It is so important that you get out to vote. In the last election, the majority of the votes were cast by men, and they were men over the age of 45. Please use your vote. All over the world, people die for the right to be able to vote. Women have died for the right to vote. Vote, 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 October 22nd.
And once again, that was Barbara Mann and Mary Thring. Barbara Mann is running in Ward 1. Mary Thring is running in Ward 2. After the break, we will hear from candidates in Wards 3, 4, and 6, Jason Dodge, Andrew Aurora, and Mark McKinnon, respectively. In the meantime, we will take a musical break as I sit here by myself in the studio. Oh, well. As always, you're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and community radio.
It passes my eyes and stuns my senses. The outside world flows through these fences. They let out more than they take in. They bleed me out and I can't staunch them. My mouth lets out more than it takes in. It bleeds me out and I can't help it. It is nothing but a muscle flexed, a swirl now and next.
Mm-hmm.
And that was The Real Work by the Great Lakes Swimmers, and that is from their new album, The Waves, The Wake. It is number one on the CFRU chart, so that's why I chose it. So, it, you know, if it didn't meet your musical taste, whatever. I don't normally choose the music here. That's one of Scotty's chores. Okay, that was a little defensive. I will instead segue to our next batch of council interviews. And continuing on our trips through the wards, we have Jason Dodge of Ward 3, Indu Arora of Ward 4, and Mark McKinnon of Ward 6. Mark McKinnon, of course, is well known to our listeners. He is the incumbent of Ward 6 and has been on Open Sources many times. Jason Dodge and Indu Arora are both challengers in their wards. I caught up with all of them. And so let's hear from them now. So Jason Dodge, I think we'll start with, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're running on the idea that Ward 3 needs more balanced representation, that there's something you can give residents here that they may not be getting from the two present councillors. So am I right? And what is that?
I'd say you're right, yep. My main reason for running is to bring, as you said, balance to Ward 3. We find that there's Ward 3 is a very diverse ward. Mm. We have people that are quite well off, and we have new to the country people. It's a great mix. But I find, and many people have found as I'm knocking on the doors, that they don't feel represented. Our representatives are great, but they are 20 years away from having a mortgage. They're 20 years past raising a family. And there's a lot of young families, there's a lot of young professionals in Ward 3, and they feel that their voices just aren't heard.
I think that's a recurring theme of this election, is that there are people who feel that council, no matter how they may feel about the individual councillors themselves, and they may like their councillors, but that the makeup of council is missing something.
Something, yeah. I would agree with that. I mean, everybody on council is in it for the right reasons, I'd hope, for the community. And you can't please everyone, but I just feel there's a large portion that just aren't having their voices heard, and that's why I'm running.
Can you give some examples of that?
Affordability, livability. We hear oftentimes at council, especially during budget time, that, oh, it's only a few dollars, or that's just a drop in the bucket. But for many of us, it's getting harder and harder to find that extra $400 a year for the raised taxes or for new user fees and service fees. More and more and more people, especially on fixed pensions. I'm hearing a lot of that at the doors as well, that it's just getting to the point where they don't know where to find the money anymore.
I think the reverse of that is, where does city council find the money? Because speaking just as a council watcher who's there at the meetings, it seems like the last few years the savings or that the tax increase has been mitigated by not doing things instead of cutting whatever. But I wonder if about the no matter how you may feel about cutting services or cutting staff or whatever, about the political will, and if that's the direction that people are wanting to go to. I guess my question is, how do you sell that? How do you sell the idea of, like, maybe we have to tighten our belts? How do we have to, maybe sacrifice something?
It doesn't necessarily have to be a sacrifice. And again, budget to budget, it's going to vary. I think one of the great things that has been happening recently is the service reviews. I know some people take it as a chance at criticism, or but I look at it as more of a way of efficiency. I make a living at every dollar that is donated to where I work. I have to respect that dollar, understanding it's not my dollar, and what's the most I can get for that dollar. And I think the service reviews that have started recently is definitely the right step in that direction. Every year for budget, the city staff, they always present it in stages where they get, here's the bare bones, here's what we absolutely have to have, And then there's the list of recommendations or expansions, anything like that. And I think if the tax rate is getting too far out of hand, I think that's where council has to have the willingness to evaluate those expansions and look and really pick what's going to help Guelph the most for services and what can wait for another year or... Mm. And we need to leverage the government a lot more as well. We have to, despite political views, you have to work with them, even if you got to bite your tongue doing it. But the idea with the province or the federal government is leverage them for every penny we can get to help offset some of the costs for the citizens of Guelph.
I was talking to somebody earlier who said that, you know, with the last government, our representative here, our MPP, was a member of that government and was a cabinet member. Is that necessarily feasible with a new government where our member of parliament isn't just not a member of that government, but is the leader of another party? And, you know, you may not have an answer to that, but I'm just curious in terms of how we navigate that relationship, which is already started out. And, you know, looking at what's happened in the city of Toronto as something that's not necessarily a cordial affair, let's say.
Yeah, and it could be shaky, obviously. Sure. With the political governments, and that's the key. I mean, when you're in the role of council or an elected official for the municipality, you got to just think of Guelph. Mm. Again, political views have to be put aside, and it can be tough. Like, I'm not denying that. And as a councillor, you have the right to have your own opinions to political views or political parties, but it's important that you're representing such a vast number of people with different views.
Right.
You gotta leave that at the door, come to work, and we'll never get anything from a government, especially now, if all we're doing is protesting them.
Right
or wrong.
Yeah. I see what you mean.
We're not gonna get anything if we're fighting. We got to find ways to play nice, look at what maybe they are willing to give us, and navigate that and get that.
Right.
Every bit helps, right?
Right, yeah. I want to talk about what might be needed to help Ward 3. This is, you know, we're talking about from the border of downtown to almost at the Hanlon. It's an incredibly diverse area. And I don't mean in terms of people, but in terms of the land use, in terms of... You know, what is going on here? So what do you think Ward 3 needs in terms of, I don't know, improvements, infrastructure, commercial, whatever?
Yes, all of it. I mean, it's not a secret. Everybody's battling for it, right?
Right.
And there's only so much that can be done at a time. What I'm hearing a lot of, I mean, you get the non-sexy stuff, like the infrastructure.
Yeah.
I mean, we're getting sinkholes on Paisley Road now, just around the corner here, and it's aging infrastructure that's becoming a more serious issue. That's across the board as well.
Right.
Our parks, our recreational facilities, they're in need of investment. Mm. They have been for a long time. Exhibition Arena would be a perfect example of that, where Exhibition Park is a fabulous park, but the arena just kind of has fallen to the wayside year after year after year. And there's a lot of reasons for that, too. I mean, in order to really give it the update it needs, it would be very costly because there's a lot of issues with the roof. There's everything. But that's from neglect. If we push it off side year after year after year, much like the police station, the main cause of a $35-plus million renovation was because, well, we'll postpone it one more year. If we're making smaller investments at the right times, then we can definitely protect our assets a lot more.
Right. And because I think a lot of people view Ward 3 as built up, you know, there are areas in Ward 1, areas in Ward 6, which people are saying we need those amenities, and they're looking at Ward 3 or Ward 2 or Ward 4, whatever, and saying, well, they have amenities, but we need some.
Yeah.
And there's that push-pull as well.
And there absolutely is. I mean, I think Ward 3 needs a grocery store, but... No, I'm sorry. That's not a shot at Ward 1 because, really, that's a horrible situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wish the municipality, our hands weren't tied with that. So I apologize for that joke.
It's
I think every joke has been made, so it's nothing new under the sun. But
yeah.
I want to talk about your work as an advocate for the for people with disabilities.
Yes.
Because I think you made a very impassioned plea at the meeting where there was the vote was taken for online voting.
Yep.
And that, of course, has not is not part of this election cycle. But in terms of looking forward, and when you're on council, you'll have obviously some sway in terms of what the next election looks like.
Correct.
So how can you address people's security concerns, you know, the things we see in the news every day, with the things you deal with hands-on, which is there are people who want that option because it makes their life easier.
Yeah. Well, for some people, it's not necessarily just they want that option.
Yeah.
They needed it.
Yeah.
There are people that, I'm on the Accessibility Advisory Committee, and there were people that approached saying that in 2014, that was the first time in their lives they were able to independently vote. Mm-hmm. And that was extremely important to me as well. It wasn't just about convenience, and it's not, accessibility isn't necessarily just mobility.
Right.
And that's one of the kind of misconceptions that really seem to skew it a bit.
So, Indu, I think I want to start with how there are so many people of color running in this election, so many, actually, women of color especially, and one of your potential colleagues from Ward 6 noted online that, you know, almost 20% of Guelph is people of color now. So what makes... You know, maybe this is the year, the election year, that, you know, we start to feel that a bit more, that we start to see more representation on council. And how does that play into the reasons why you wanted to run?
I actually didn't want to run because of my skin color. I am running because I'm the right candidate. I come from a community builder background. I'm involved with the neighborhood group. I'm involved in a lot of fundraising initiatives. And the color of my skin actually never came into play. I will bring diversity from my background, my cultural diversity, but that's really wasn't the reason that motivated me to run. I wanted to run to help my community.
And you were saying you went to the school where you now run the neighborhood group out of. I think that probably sows a lot of, you know, in terms of your roots in this community especially, what is it about this area that, you know, makes you stay here and makes you invest so much into the Ward 4 and its people?
Well, I'm born and raised Guelph, and I've been living in Ward 4 since I was 7. So I did go to Westwood School, and now it's funny that I'm the president of the neighborhood group. Life comes full circle, and I love this part of town. There's that friendly family feeling, like we're standing in the middle of the fall fair and you see all the families, we're all mingling with each other, and it's just such a great community feel, and I could never move away from this.
it's funny about this area because it seems like, you know, we have Ward 1 and Ward 6 where so much is changing, there's so much development happening. You have downtown and Ward, that's also part of Ward 1, but it's also intersects Ward 2 and Ward 3, and it feels like in Ward 4, we're kind of in a little island unto ourselves. It seems like, I don't know, maybe you can describe how you feel about that. And just speaking as myself as a Ward 1, as a Ward 4 citizen, and it just feels like, you know, we're in a little island here. We're a little separated from all the other stuff that's going on in Guelph. We're kind of in a good place.
I agree. We are in a good place. It is nice for us to be connected to the rest of the city as well in terms of the bike trails and in terms of our traffic here. It is nice to be kind of our little paradise, Ward 4. We've got the greenery here. We have had development, and there are quite a number of people now living in Ward 4. But it's still quiet enough, that family feels, that safe feel.
Yeah.
But, I love Ward 4.
Well, I think you touched on something, too, that, you know, in terms of the connectivity to the rest of the city, for example, there's not a direct, like, north-south route, like, from the north part of town all the way to the south part of town in this part of the city. Can you talk a bit about you know, your ideas for how to improve transportation and, you know, talk about a bit opening up Ward 4 a bit more in terms of accessibility we were talking about.
Yes. In terms of transit, I think we would benefit from having hubs in different parts of the city. So like a north hub, a south hub, east, west. So we would have more frequency and more coverage. And definitely Ward 4, we need that, especially going out to the industrial areas, maybe even getting in touch with the industrial people and coordinating bus routes with their shift timing. So that would definitely be something that would connect Ward 4 a little more in terms of transit and people taking transit, because the need for transit here is immense.
And certainly, you know, one of the bus that actually goes by here, the number 10, is one of the busier routes, but especially, I'm sure you probably noticed this too, when we're talking about shift changes at those factories, when we're talking about when school gets in and out, the bus gets exponentially busier. So have you been talking to any residents like that about issues like that when you're out canvassing, and what are they saying?
Yes, people do want more of a transit presence, more coverage, more frequency. So that would definitely help us take transit more often rather than pulling our car out for a 5-minute drive. And the biggest complaint I'm hearing is that to take transit to, say, one of the industrial areas up on Elmira or whatever, it takes them a 5-minute car ride, but transit takes them like 35 minutes. So that's just not acceptable. And with the transit review slotted to be completed at the end of this year, I'm sure we'll be uncovering some other methods, and I hope to see some improvements.
Well, you know, we should take advantage of the scene because we're standing in front of the community plan board. How do you think this is going to affect this ward? Because we're talking about things like growth, we're talking about things like maybe a new hospital, of certainly affordability, all that. And, you know, where does Ward 4 fit into the community plan?
I think Ward 4 is a little unique. We definitely do need more housing here in terms of rentals. There are some buildings and there are some developments going on with buildings, and but just more affordable, like rents. What I'm hearing at the doors are that rents are high and they need to be brought down. Maybe some initiatives to homeowners to build their basements and have basement apartments. Then the parking issue comes into play. We just went through, Ward 4 went through that driveway width bylaw, and I'm glad that citizens are having relief from that for a while, and I'm going to be helping the streets that were affected apply for the exception when staff brings it back.
Okay. Because that did eventually crawl our way, right?
It actually started here.
Oh, did it?
I believe it started here because I actually went through that personally last year, right before I was moving, 3 weeks. And so I believe it started last year, and my street at the time had sent a petition in. So I think it did start in this area and then filtered over to Ward 1 and started affecting the rest of the wards.
You're obviously speaking like a counselor. It started in Ward 4.
I'm speaking as a resident that was affected by that.
Fair enough. We've talked about transit. But in terms of the needs here, you know, affordable housing obviously being one, but in terms of, like, maybe community needs, commercial, employment, what do you think Ward 4 needs?
I think Ward 4's small businesses need support. I have uncovered while canvassing, like, so many small businesses that people had never heard of. And I just was astonished that these businesses, to stay in business, need our support, need that visibility, need to be talked about, and people need to know that they're here. So I definitely think small businesses need support. Traffic is becoming an issue as well, speeding. So maybe traffic calming measures are needed as well. And in terms of our parks, Margaret Green Park would greatly benefit from some electricity. So we can have concerts, a generator, noise isn't covering up the music, maybe some movies in the park, have that community feel.
Yeah, this is a huge space.
Yes.
That almost feels like it's underutilized. I mean, even though there's, you know, sports here 3 or 4 nights a week, if not more, but I think people, if they know Margaret Green Park and are familiar with the area, probably look at this as a bounty as compared to maybe other areas of the city is where there's no parkland, whether or not it's hooked up to the electrical grid. But in terms of how you see your role fitting in, and not just working for Ward 4 citizens, but in terms of how you would work with the rest of City Council on issues that affect the whole city, what are you thinking about?
I listen to everyone in my capacity on some of my committees and fundraising committees and the neighborhood group. I've worked with so many different types of people and personalities. I believe I can work with anyone, and I look forward to having different ideas come to the table and speaking to the constituents about what they want, bringing their voice to City Council, representing their voices properly.
So Mark McKinnon, I've been thinking a lot about your race, because it's one of the two races where there's one incumbent, not two. But interestingly, you are the only man running in Ward 6.
Yeah.
You're the last man standing in Ward 6.
Literally, yes. No, I have noticed that, which is interesting. I mean, the amount of diversity we see in this particular election across all wards has been really good. I've really liked to see it. And I know that there was a real large movement about the Ask Her to Run earlier, for say, the past year. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing the results of that. I think we're seeing more engagement of women that are feeling more empowered to run. And I think that's wonderful. It's a really, really good thing. Certainly, I don't think politics is dominated by either men or women. And, you know, the fact that I happen to be the only man running in Ward 6 is certainly fine. I mean, I look forward to a good election either way.
Well, it certainly helps you stand out. But because you're also the incumbent, you get to come from a perspective where you've been on council, you've made the decisions, you've seen the reports, you've read all the data. Can you talk about how Ward 6 is different? I mean, because it's rapidly changed, but how Ward 6 is different in 2018 versus from when you first ran in 2014?
Yeah, I think the lot of it, 4 years ago, it was all talking about what will be coming in terms of all the development. And now a lot of it's happened. We had the developments on Arkell. Obviously, we've seen the ramifications of the student housing along Gordon Street. And then there's additional housing that's been put up across from the Guelph Theater in the South End. And so a lot of the times 4 years ago where I was talking about, you know, how do we manage traffic and how do we guide the development appropriately going forward? Well, we've actually seen the results of some of that. And we've seen even the ones that haven't been built yet, we've seen some of the votes of it with the new 14-story building that's been approved on Gordon Street, which is a first in that area. Mm-hmm. And so that's, to me, the big difference is seeing the realities. And I don't think the sky has fallen in Ward 6. I think, yes, it's less convenient than it used to be, but it's still really convenient. I was actually just meeting some residents outdoor knocking and came across a couple. One was from Oakville, one was from Mississauga. They got married looking for a place to buy and couldn't afford either of those areas, so they drove until they could afford out in Guelph. And they said they moved here and they couldn't stop raving about how good the traffic was here. And it's like, oh, they can't believe how quick it is to get across the city and how fast everything is and how polite everyone is, and it's just a great driving experience. And, you know, this was just them offering it to me as a Ward 6 counselor, but how great driving in Ward 6 was. And I think if that's in contrast to right. A lot of the people who are lifelong residents of Guelph talking about how bad it is in Guelph because of the traffic. So a lot of it's perspective. I drive in Ward 6 like everyone else. It takes maybe an extra minute longer than I would like to get somewhere else. And it's going to keep getting worse. It's not going to get better, even with the Transportation Master Plan coming up and the improvements we're going to be making along Gordon Street, until they make significant changes on the Hanlon and make that a true expressway, which I've kind of given up hope that it's going to be anytime in the near future. But until that happens, we're going to start seeing and continue seeing the buildup of traffic on our streets in South Guelph in particular, with all the high density developments going in. It's just going to be the new reality, and people have to understand that's the reality where we are in. But we're not Mississauga. We're not Milton. It's nowhere near that level. And I think the hyperbole that goes around how we're turning into, you know, the Mississauga, it's just not reality.
Then how do you confront that, though? Because, you know, it is a reality, at least in the way some people are thinking. And you can't really go knocking on a door and someone says, we're turning into Guelphisauga, and you're like, no, you're wrong, because I think that's a lost vote there. So, you know, I guess how do you manage sort of how you see reality and how someone else sees the situation in Ward 6?
Yeah, and you can't minimize, obviously, resident concerns. I mean, something that's important to me may be different than someone else. They have different levels of importance, whether it's frontline services right on the road or something that's larger city-based. So, no, certainly you can't minimize that. But it comes down to the education aspect of, you know, where we're going. And it's policy-driven. So if we have good policy on the Transportation Master Plan update, if we have good policy on how we're going to develop communities, even if they're high-density, how we're going to develop them with transit in mind, for example. If we can have better roads in terms of width and bike lanes considerations and separated bike lanes and perhaps cut-ins for transit, maybe advanced signals for buses, things that are going to make the streets a little bit better. But over time, we're gonna start seeing, I'm predicting, an increased densification. It's going to get worse and worse and worse, and then it's going to start getting better and better and better.
Right.
And that's from a number of things. One, policies that Guelph bring forward, but also the change in technology regarding auto driving with AIs driving our vehicles. It's going to change how transit works, and it's going to be, for the next 10 years, it's going to be more and more inconvenient for people in Ward 6, but we are doing the best we can. I know the city is on top of it with our master plan update, with our plans for widening roads and making sure we have good transportation. So, no, I don't want to minimize anyone's concerns, but at the same time, people have to get used to the reality that it's not Guelph of 20 years ago. It's
right.
Not going back there. It won't be there. And we just have to understand, relax a little bit, and take in Guelph for what it is today.
It seems like the motto of Ward 6 is it's going to get worse before it gets better. And that's not necessarily any particular politician's fault, but just, you know, when you think about that development, all that commercial development at the corner of Clarendon and Gordon, that took years because you needed all those people to come in. And I think the changes you're talking about are saying that if you want those changes, you're going to have to let more people in. You're going to have to be a bit more comfortable with the 14-story building.
Yeah, certainly from a commercial point of view, yeah, they are driven by residential developments. But the reality is, when we're looking at all developments happening, people typically don't benefit from other houses going up next to them. Now, they do if that'll lead to commercial. There's no doubt about that. But, of course, I'm not going to want a four-story building across the street from me because it doesn't provide me any benefit. You know, having other people driving cars doesn't help me. My situation does not get improved by a higher density of development. I understand that. It's completely logical. It doesn't mean that's a good reason to stop development or halt development. But it has to be the understanding that, no, we know that people are hesitant to change in nature. I'm not talking about Guelph people. People in general, we don't like change. We like things staying the way they are. And it's going, and particularly if it's going to negatively impact or the perception of negative impact. So there's more traffic, it's less safe, more speeding, it's taking me longer to drive somewhere. No one wants that. The reality is it's here. And we just have to understand this is the reality. Let's get used to it. People live in Toronto. People live in Mississauga, and they drive those roads all the time. And you know, life hasn't ended for them. It's not going to get that bad in Guelph. We are still a small community, very community-driven, I would say, from that. And even with our population anticipated to grow to 191,000 by 2041, which to me is just a shock. It's not that far away. And population growth is massive. And a lot of it's going to be in Ward 6, particularly in the Claremont area. Yep. But I just don't see it having that big of an impact on people's lives unless they take it, that they allow it to impact them, that they concentrate on and focus on it, about how it's not the same Guelph that they grew up in. Right. And if you focus on that, yeah, you're going to, you know, law of attraction. You're going to attract that negativity if you focus on it. So we're going to try to make the best policies we can to ease the traffic, to make it a community driven with parks and recreation facilities and make the city the best we can, understanding that it's still going to progress forward.
Right. And I was talking to a professor who works in the realm of smart cities, and one of the things he was talking about was everyone's going to have problems with development, especially in their own backyard, but maybe one of the things that can stymie that is getting more community involvement. And I'm wondering, you know, being down at this end, you sort of, I mean, it's not that, literally not that far away from downtown where we're standing here at the corner of Gordon and Edinburgh. But I think people feel like maybe there's a separation between, you know, what's going on downtown and City Hall's downtown and where they are here. So is there maybe outreach potential there going forward? Like maybe in the next 4 years, one of the goals of whoever ends up Ward 6 Council is just try and get more people in on the ground floor of these things rather than sort of they show up at the planning meeting and voila, you might have a 14-story tower going next to you.
Yeah, that's a great question. And a lot of it with politics is people are engaged when it affects them, something affects them. And, you know, we would love everyone to be engaged all the time. But just like not everyone likes hockey, not everyone likes Tim Hortons, not everyone is going to like politics. And it's okay that people aren't engaged in politics on that level. And when it does impact them, yeah, become engaged and find out what's going on. Get the facts, do the research, talk to your counselors or city staff, talk to your neighbors. So that's all good. And we would love to get more in community engagement. Part of the problem with community engagement that is always there outside of, you know, maybe like a 100-person hamlet is going to be who do you hear from when engagement comes along. So there could be a particular issue and you might hear from 20 people and they're all against something or for something. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the will of the entire community. And it doesn't also mean that that's the best planning decision. So residents may say, we don't want X, and the city staff and governments on the provincial level say, well, X is what you have to do. That is the correct thing to move forward in a responsible way. And so even if the community is engaged and gives feedback, sometimes they might feel they're not being listened to. And there's a big difference between listening and then following. Right. So I'm always here to listen to everyone's input. It doesn't mean I'm going to follow everyone's input. I mean, yes, I've had people say, I voted for you. You're going to vote the way I want to on certain issues. Right. Yes, that happens. But the reality is no voice is ever ignored.
And once again, that was Jason Dodge running in Ward 3, Indu Arora running in Ward 4, and Mark McKinnon running in Ward 6. And if you liked listening to those, you can listen to the past interviews we have done with counselors. We have more interviews coming up next week. The slate on that is The slate on that is not exactly clear yet. We are trying to, again, do as many of them as we can before Election Day, which is coming up rapidly on October the 22nd. And for programming notes further, Eggie Milners, mayoral candidate, is coming into the lives in the studio on October 11th. Cam Guthrie will be in the week after that on October the 18th. Both of those interviews will be live in studio for the full hour. So if you have questions you would like to ask either or both of them, you are encouraged to get in touch with us and let us know what those questions are. You can find us on opensourcesguelph.com. That is our website. You can go to Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And if you would like to listen to any of these past episodes, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or by downloading on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. I am also reposting them on Guelph Politico, so these should be relatively easy to find if you subscribe to either or both of the sites. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.ca. Scotty can be found at Scotty Hertz on Facebook and Twitter, and he also writes at spannerbook.wordpress.com, and I know there is a recent Spannerbook entry for you to check out if you would like. And Scotty will be back here next week, and so will we for that matter. There's more great programming here coming up on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back here on Thursdays, 5 p.m. next week, and likely every week after that. Maybe not into infinity, but you know. Anyway, come back and listen to us next week, Open Sources, 5 p.m. on Thursday here on CFRU.